大家好，您现在收听的是 MultiCoin Capital 旗下的播客系列51说，我是主理人 Mabel。 本系列主要探索区块链在亚洲范围内的快速发展，特别是中国从业者的观点、社区和运营。本节目希望能够以对话体的形式桥接东西方，给听众多一个理解行业的视角与参考。本播客将包含中英文讨论，您现在听到的语言将是我在本期节目中使用的语言。感谢您的收听。
Mabel 将是 MultiCoin Capital 的合伙人， Mabel 或嘉宾在播客中的观点仅代表他们的个人看法，并不代表 MultiCoin Capital 官方的观点。此播客仅用于提供信息，不作为投资参考。MultiCoin Capital 有时可能会在此节目中讨论某些代币或公司中持有的头寸。
Hi everyone, welcome back to 51%. I'm your host, Mabel Zhang. This week, I'm really pleased to welcome Than, the co-founder of Coin98, to join us at 51%. Welcome, Than.
Hey, Mabel, thanks for having me today. It was my pleasure to have the first time on 51%. And great to, share our stories and what we are building at Coin98.
Yep, absolutely. 51% has been kind of focusing on a lot of the Asian project. And I think probably this is the first time ever I invited someone who based in Vietnam to join the show. So I'm sure like a lot of our audience is actually not very familiar with, what's going on with the ecosystem there, what you were doing before Coin98 and also what you're doing with Coin98.
Yeah, sure. So before Coin98, I was an embedded system engineer. My first startup is during the time that I started in the university. It was a research lab that I worked there, and then we co-founded the first outsourcing companies with some of the guys in the research labs. So at the beginning, we offer some kind of services to the tech startups in the Silicon Valley and some of the companies in Europe and Australia and companies who are doing smartwatches, wearable products, betting, I think 10, 12 years ago. And then during that time when we developed those kind of embedded system, building the everything from scratch, building the hardware, and then building the firmware on top of the hardware, and also building the software running on the firmware that we build. We have a lot of time working with some of the manufacturers in China as well, when we can really verify what we already built comes in the real life. It was the time that I've learned the most about how can we turn a system that we design on a computer to something physical that you can really use in real life. So we found that I found that company with some of my friends in the research lab for 5 years until I kickstart my second startup, which is a e-commerce companies that we innovate and the physical products that already have on the market, but also working with the manufacturers in Alibaba, and then we do we build our brand there, and then we ship order products to the Amazon, and then start building the brand and selling on Amazon. And after that, when we already have more sales, we scale it to we start building our own website and start looking for more ways to promote the products. I do that business before before 2017, when I think a lot of people Bitcoin went up, and a lot of people, of my friends, they asked me to learn more about this stuff. At the beginning, I make some good money as well. But then after that, during the bear market, instead of giving up the market, I started to learn about opportunity in the market, and that how we how we start building the Coin98. Coin98 back in the day, it's just a research team that we trying to understand about the technology, how should we invest as an investor. But then over time, when the market is went down from 20,000, when Bitcoin price went down from 20,000 to 6,000 and then 3,000, I do see a lot of OGs in the space. They already left the market. So after months of doing research, I do believe that this is the technology that's really have the most reward ratio. If I put more time and effort and money into this kind of technology, maybe when we will get a reward in the next 2-3 years after building it. And then I switched my focus from part-time doing research for in crypto, then full-time, and then start building the companies. And things just rolling out until how we get today.
Got it. This is super helpful. Thanks for sharing the how you kind of started and where you are right now. Other than yourself, I was intending to ask you, what are some of the other interesting projects that's in Vietnam or in Southeast Asia?
I think some of the projects that I really I'm a fan of them who are building the projects right from Southeast Asia. The first one is Band Protocol. The second one is probably Amphar and Kuiper and Axie. So they are some of the teams that I really, really love working with. And also I think they, at the beginning, we Coin98 start as a research firm, but then we start to forming our product arm, building our own product. We got inspired a lot from those kind of builders as well. They really shows the world that, so if Asian builders can step in and then, building their own, their own product and serving the global user base, it makes me think that, okay, so if they can build those kind of product, that we can do it too. So we start learning how to build one for ourselves.
Got it. This is interesting. Yeah, I think that the examples that you gave are mostly applications. And I do realize that oftentimes Asian teams have an edge building applications because they like to iterate very fast and then deliver rapidly. So you've earlier touched upon, some of the product lines that you have. Like you have a matrix of product under the Coin98 brand, the wallet, the analytics / research outlet, and then also the DeFi applications incubated by you guys, and also the bridges and so on. So can you maybe introduce a little bit more to our audience what Coin98, like the product lines are, and then why are they important to the larger Coin98 ecosystem, how they work with each other?
Yeah, sure. So Coin98 basically have three arms. So the first one is our product arms. We call it Coin98 Labs. It's where it's a kind of product factory where we hiring a bunch of researchers and engineers, and then we also explore and untap opportunities on the market who some kind of problems that people the users really, really need a solution for that, but there's no builders that already step in and build a perfect solutions for those people. So we explore those kind of demand, and then we just step in and we build the product and serve to those kind of audience. So that's Coin98 Labs, a product factory. The second one's is we call it like Coin98 network or Coin98 media, where we focus on educating people to the to learn more about crypto, what kind of product they should use, how should they what kind of a product they really looking for when it comes to invest. And the last arm that we just started recently, which is, you know, Coinai Ventures, is a kind of, you know, when we already established, and then we think we know that it's, you know, it's really hard to build something meaningful, you know, something from, you know, scratch to become something really, you know, zen now. So we think we just want to come back and support those kind of builders to have a really good bootstrap at the beginning. So that's basically three arms that we are building at Coin98. In terms of strategies, I think Coin98 Labs is more about, like I said, you know, building a startup or, you know, or a product is really, really hard. You know, it doesn't mean anything if you build a product that have no users. So the media arm is, you know, on one side is educating people to learn more about crypto, but on the other side, it's also serve a you know, initial user base for to test and really give us the feedback at the beginning. A lot of features that we already ship in, you know, for Coin98 wallet and all, and Coin98 exchange, and, you know, at the beginning is, we think that these features might be helpful, but then when we ship it to the market, we immediately, you know, receive a lot of feedbacks from the users where they really come to us and they request for other features. So it's totally different than that what we already thought and we assume at the beginning. So I think having and owning a user base like that really, really have us, you know, it have us can, you know, accelerate the flywheel, where we can really build, you know, we can come up with a solutions, we ship it in you know, in the fastest way, and then we receive the feedback from our users, and then we improve it and we reship it again to the market, as it have us have the most and the fastest flywheel when it comes to, you know, product development. So it's really, really helpful. The ventures arm, you know, in the other way, is help us to verify what we thought about the technologies, you know, the DeFi legals and how everything was built in this industry. So it's more about expanding the influence of Coin98 wallet. So before we started Coin98 Ventures, I think a lot of people, they only know about Coin98 wallet and then other product, but we feel it's hard when we do, you know, some kind of partnership working with, you know, other protocols because they didn't know about as much. But then when we start founding the, you know, the ventures arm and doing you know, more investment like that, we have more influence and more chance to really work with the teams that we already invest and to integrate Coin98 wallet. And then also we can all, when we already issue C98 tokens, it's a kind of ecosystem where you can really use C98 or, you know, expand the utility of C98 to a much broader, you know, markets. So that's basically like what we're doing at Coin98 and how is, and, you know, everything is aligned to one single goal, which is, you know, trying to expand the whole ecosystem.
Right. That's fascinating. So you touch upon a bit on the feedback loop that how, you know, kind of bootstrap the passive flywheel for your product development. I'm kind of curious to dive a little bit deeper on that one. Is that a formal kind of governance process, or is it more just that, you know, you guys are very scrappy, kind of listen to people's on Discord, on Twitter or whatever? How is that process actually looks like, and how do you scale that?
Yeah, so currently, I think, you know, at the beginning when the team is small and, you know, we handle, you know, most of the conversation on Telegram and then and through emails. But then when the users start, you know, growing quickly, and at some point where we need to serve like some kind of like thousands of tickets per day, we start to, you know, we were looking for a better way to communicate with them. And currently, you know, the best, you know, the best solutions for us right now is support them through the live chat. So inside of Coin98 Wallet, if you use Coin98 Wallet app, then when you click into the Coin98 logo, there will be a live chat box out there where you can really report the problems, or you can request, or you can just send us some kind of you know thoughts that you think that we might improve the product. Or if you're on the web, you can just go to coin98.com, and then there will be a live chat box, you know, right in the bottom. You can just, you know, contact us, you know, 24/7. We already set up a customer service team who really support you know all the users that are using Coin98 products to make sure that we can, you know, track all the problems quick and solve all the problems for the users quickly.
That's super cool. I'm sure that, you know, the fact that I actually noticed this, like, it's, you know, across from multiple Asian-based team, like, they have very good customer service and operation team. Although, like, we think DeFi is something completely open source and permissionless, but at the same time, having strong community support and having strong operational support definitely helps. So thanks for sharing that. On top of that, I noticed that Coin98 has been supporting a lot of different chains, like not just the EVM compatible ones, but obviously, you know, Terra, Solana, and also some of the exchange oriented chains. So why do you think multi-chain support is important? And then at the same time, like, you know, to support that many chains, it's definitely going to take a lot of your resources. How do you think about kind of allocating some of the resources to the chains that might be having less traction, but, you know, still taking quite a bit of your resources?
Yeah, this is a very interesting question. I think about this kind of, you know, resource allocations a lot as well. So first, talking about how we thought about multi-chain support is important. In our imaginations, I think the future of blockchain is like that will be, or at some point in future, where when the technology is already, you know, involved, we will see there will be thousands or even hundreds of thousands of blockchain that are available on the market. But then each blockchains have their own ecosystem, their own economy, and the way that we thought about it is some kind of digital nations. One of my conversations with Trung, which is the CEO and co-founder of Axis, a few months ago, also verified me about this kind of, you know, thoughts as well, where he said that at that time, I think, you know, Axie user base is somewhere around like 200,000 users, and they are generating millions of transactions per day. He said that, you know, the Ethereum is just gas fees right now is so super high, where, you know, that user base normally, you know, the value of each transactions every time that they make of that user of the users is very, very small. It makes, you know, it makes no sense for those kind of users to pay a very, very high gas fee, you know, when they're trying to transact a very small kind of value. So that's why they started to build. And also, you know, their user base is really, really is huge. It makes sense to them to just starting to figure out ways that they you know they can build a kind of like blockchain platform for their own community, and they call it a digital nations for Axie's users. I think that was the original stories where they started building running blockchain, and I think this is some kind of the thesis that people or the builders have the most users. When at some point when they already have a large users, they will starting to figure out ways to build their own chain. And if we are living in that, you know, multi-chain future, there will be thousands of chains, you know, available on the market. And then you, as a user, you want to, you know, you have one asset and running, and sometimes you want to convert it into Ethereum. And then you also, you want to do some trade on Solana. So I think, you know, the multi-chain futures is something is really, really, you know, that we really think that, you know, that might be something that we are well heading to. And then So then come back, you know, if that's something that the futures, you know, that you really believe about the futures of blockchain and multi-chain, then you want to be, you know, one of the key or the core contributors to that trend, right? And back to the, you know, but then, you know, when you're trying to support a lot of chains, there could be a lot of resources, you know, need to be allocated, you know, like you said. So at Coin98, we spend a lot of time, you know, to build a framework that can help us to, you know, support more chain at scale. It took us about, you know, more than a year to build this kind of framework. So before, I think, you know, in the early days, it took us somewhere around like a month or even 2 months if we want to integrate a new chain. But it's, you know, the, like the duration for, you know, the chain integration slowly reduced from a month to 2 weeks to 1 week. And right now, at this stage, we already have the framework that we can integrate any new chain in just, you know, 1 or 2 days. So I think that wouldn't be a big problem for us. And, you know, talking about, you know, wasting those kind of research, we treat it like a risk and reward. Every time that we decide, should we integrate this chain or should we prioritize to integrate this chain or not? So like I said, currently, you know, it only took us 1 or 2 days to integrate a new chain, and then when we believe as the multi-chain futures you know, starting to get more, you know, attention, a lot of people, they start to building their own blockchain platform, they're starting to you know, the ecosystem on those chains starting to, you know, growing, and then there will be a demand for users on that blockchain platform as well, and that blockchain itself gonna spend a lot of money and effort and resources to bootstrap the whole ecosystem. That's where we really want to, we are seeing it like a growth hacking strategies for Coin98, where we can becoming the first wallet that can really, you know, support those kind of new blockchain. And also not only, you know, layer one blockchain, but also layer two, like Optimism or Arbitrums, or recently Boba Network as well. I think we treat it like, and if the reward of those kind of integration is for us is huge. Sometimes when you support, let's say that you support 10 different chains, and then one out of 10 can help you to bring in like the next 100,000 users for Coin98. I think that already considered a successful decision for us. So that's our approach in terms of, you know, resource allocations and how we thought about, you know, and why we support so many chains.
Right. Yeah. I guess what you're saying is that I think I like your marginal cost kind of framework of thinking about this. And also, I think what you're saying is that basically it's like the idea of diversification. I mean, some of them might, you know, just kind of go in vain, but at the same time, like, you know, if some of these actually take off, then, you know, the cross-selling benefit is actually going to outweigh a lot of the original and the initial costs that you spent on top of it. And especially, you know, once right, that totally makes sense.
Yep. So I think our biggest success for this kind of strategies, I would say, is Solana and also BSC. So we support Solana, I think, back in DeFi summer last year, when, you know, I think even before Serum was started and was built. So we evaluate the technology and we decided this kind of technology can really scale. So we just wanted to becoming one of the first builders and wallet provider to support Solana. Back in the day, you cannot use MetaMask or, you know, other wallets. I think the only options at that time is Solana, but Solana is not really support on mobile. So we wanted like becoming the first one that to support Solana. And then back in the day, I still remember that Solana ecosystem is there's not many things that you can do with the with DeFi and the ecosystem and Solana,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But then mm-hmm. the ecosystem start growing very, very quickly. So, you know, we didn't spend any, you know, budget for the marketing, but then you're just trying to work with some of the builders on Solana and really work with the Solana Foundation, trying to figure out how can to introduce Solana into, you know, to the retail users. I think by you know, forming those kind of partnership and collaboration, we you know, it helped us to acquire tons of users. I would say that, you know, a few hundred thousand users just by supporting Solana and really work with those guys to figure out how can we grow together. And that's one of really, really success case for us. And we really think that, you know, we can really we can take the advantage of, you know, moving fast. You know, support those kind of new emerging chains to acquire the users for CoinIDEA.
Absolutely, this is amazing. I definitely saw that you guys were early, and then I think your users, you know, benefited from a lot from this, especially given, you know, while a lot of the other multi-chain, they call themselves multi-chain wallet, but they don't really support anything outside of Ethereum, virtual machine compatible system. So I think you definitely wrote that trip. So related to this, I actually have a question that I was very curious your opinion. I remember you asked me this question in the past as well. So it's, what makes a smart contract platform worth $100 billion market cap in your opinion?
I think this is a super interesting question. I think a smart contract platform that worth hundreds of billion dollars market cap should be a smart contract platform that serves billions of users, you know, from all around the world. And add that, you know, with that amount of users, it means that, you know, that smart contract platform can basically serve, you know, daily needs of the users. So I think the first thing that, you know, that smart contract platform need to, you know, deliver is like, it needs to be, you know, fast, really fast. I think somewhere around more than 1 million TPS gonna be, you know, is something that we might looking for at this stage. And then it should be, you know, super cheap for the users to pay for the fees as well. So I think, you know, a lot of people they really think that, you know, Bitcoin gonna be going to, you know, really use in the real life, but then it's super slow, and you know, the fees that you need to pay for per transactions is high as well. It's not some kind of technology that really can go to the mass adoption, but instead, I think, you know, a smart contract platform at that stage, mass adoption stage, gonna be, you know, it's cost something like $1 or $2 per transaction. So that's gonna be great, and it should be fast, really, really fast.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, kind of tapping back to what you said earlier, I think for some of the application, if they are large enough and have their own ecosystem, they might also go to the route of like running their own private chain, or at least like part of it will be on a private chain, so that actually does not add a lot more load to the public chain. I think that's also like a kind of a mixed future is also what I could imagine as well. So I think I definitely agree with what you said, but I think on top of that, you know, some of the larger ones that have like higher workload may even add another layer of private chain to have some portion of the application run on top of that. So that's interesting. Coming back to Coin98, I'm curious about the, you know, the demographic, the current traction of your users, and also the behavior of your users. So if there's any public data that you can share, what's the traction look like for Coin98 as of today? And then where are your users based? What's the demographic?
Yeah, sure. So Coin98 user base usually dominated by Vietnamese user. I think back in the day, we 60 to 80% of our user base are coming from Vietnam. But at this stage, it's quite diversified, I would say. So nowadays, you know, I think, you know, 30% of the user base of Coin98 come from Vietnam. 40% of are come from, you know, Asian countries like Indonesia or Philippines or India. 10% come from United States and developed countries like Australia or Europe, and 20% coming from emerging countries like Turkey, Brazil, etc. So it's quite diversified. One interesting I really love about is like the way that people use Coin98 is not really for Coin98 is a Coin98 wallet, right? It's a wallet, but I think, you know, people not only use Coin98 to store the assets, but I think they want to use Coin98 to interact with DeFi protocols and also NFTs projects on multiple blockchain platform. From what I'm seeing and the feedbacks of the users, every time that they switch from MetaMask or Trust or other, you know, wallet service provider to use Coin98 it's because we allows them to access into some kind of DeFi protocol, access to the DeFi ecosystem on different chains, and those kind of chains is not available on other service, wallet service provider just yet. So I would say, the way that people use Coin98 wallet is not, I think we can, we support them the ability to store and send and transfer the assets. But at the end of the day, the way that people, from what I'm seeing, the way that people really use Coin98 wallet is as a tool to access into DeFi protocols and also, NFTs and the metaverse.
Right. Do you see a different user behavior pattern between the users in Asia or like just Southeast Asia versus the users in maybe Turkey or United States?
Yeah. So the users in, I think, the user behavior of the of users in emerging markets like Vietnam or Indonesia or Turkey, Brazil is quite similar. They kind of, like short-term investment opportunities or anything that they can help them to make money, they can take high risk, but then they want to exchange for a higher reward in a very short time. People in the developed countries like United States or Europe or Australia, they kind of they love much safer products like lending, some kind of yield farming, kind of like low risk investment or low risk and opportunities that on one side can have them to save the money, but on the other side can they can make some or earn some yield on top of the money that they have. So far from the way that they use the product, I do see the really difference between those kind of users from developed countries and emerging countries.
Got it. That's interesting. So like kind of related to what you said about some of your users use Coin98 because you offer, a better access to support to some of the decentralized applications, decentralized finance applications. In your kind of an understanding, why did you or the team want to build your own bridge in addition to offering the existing bridges that's available, across different smart contract platforms to your users?
Yeah, so first one is like the reason that we want to build our own bridge is first is for Coin98 tokens, and then for order partners that we work with. So people in my network, a lot of, we do see the trend that a lot of traditional builders, tech, startup founders, they're starting to explore opportunity in crypto and building their own blockchain project. They are going to issue their token anyway, and then they were looking for a service provider that can really help them to convert their assets between chains. So I think building our own bridge can really help us to control the tech stack, and then provide better support for those kind of partners and also for CNI tokens. And from the way that from the way that people using CoinEgg wallet, I do see the trend where people only switch. I think 60 to 80% of the of the time people use CoinEgg wallet to switch or convert their stable coins between BSC, Solana, Polygon and Ethereum, and for some cases they also converted to Avalanche and new chains like Near as well. So it's for those kind of popular chains, we might want to using our own bridge. So first we can control have better control with the tech stack, and second one is we can provide a much better customer support. The second thing is. But then, like I said, we do believe that in the future there will be thousands of chains going to deploy, and the ecosystem on those chains gonna be will grow as well. So we can build anything. We can build anything. Our resources are limited as well. So we don't want. But on the same side, our users also really need a solution to convert their assets to those kind of chain. So in this case, to fulfill the need of users, but then we don't want to burn out our debt resources. We also want to building a kind of aggregator, a bridge aggregator, where we just integrate other bridge solution into CoinEgg wallet. So the users can still, on the front end side, people can still convert the assets between chain. But in the back end, if it's not a popular chains or layer twos, but we really want to host our tech stack, then we might want to use other bridge solutions, to provide a service for the users. So that's why we on the same side, we build our own bridge, but we also support existing bridge that allows users to convert assets between different blockchains.
And then related to this question, is that you also incubated some projects for the Solana and Terra ecosystem. So I understand that the building the bridges is definitely a more convenient solution for some of the users who are just switching across different chains within CoinIdea wallet. So how are you thinking around, incubating these projects for Solana and Terra?
Yeah, I think, so Terra is just we were just, start, exploring Terra ecosystem recently. But I think, we spent a lot of time and to contribute to Solana ecosystem since day one. The way that we treat it is first we want to support the builders on Solana ecosystem, because I think CoinIdea, we want to as Solana ecosystem grow, we want to see every protocols on Solana support CoinIdea wallet. So it's also a part of our growth strategies. The second one is there will be a lot of things we can really expand the utility of CoinIdea tokens on those kind of blockchain platform as well. As you might know, CoinIdea is issued on Ethereum, Binance Smart Chain, and also on Solana. So we are looking for builders who are offering other types of services like lending or synthetic assets or margin, some kind of technologies or protocol that we can really first integrate into CoinIdea wallet, so people can use those kind of protocol right from Coinbase Wallet. The second one is, you know, we also want to expand the utility of C98. Let's say, you know, a lending protocols that we invest, we also want to hold a part of their governance token. So in future, we can vote for, accepting C98 tokens as a collateral asset on that lending platform as well. So that's the way that we think about. It's more about strategic investment to expand the utility and also the user base and also the brand awareness for Coin98 brand.
Got it. That's super helpful to understand. And I do think there's a lot of value, you know, to go a long way if you foster a developer community around your product as well. Kind of kudos to that. And right. And do you agree with the thesis of DeFi super apps? The reason I ask this question is that I think to some extent, Coin98 is a super app because your users probably do probably everything in your wallet, right? And so I used to have this super app thesis for a while, but now it seems to me that, you know, today, because of the composability in DeFi, we probably don't need the super apps anymore. So I'm curious your take on this question.
Yeah, so I think DeFi super app, we thought about a lot about this kind of thesis in the past as well. I think at this stage, from my experience, I do a lot of split tests during the time that I grow Coin98 wallet, the user base for Coin98 wallet, to testing this kind of thesis. I think the wallet itself is going to maintain as a super app, where people want to, I think people nowadays, they don't use a hot wallet just to store their assets, but then they also want to interact with a lending protocol in terms of they want to use the assets as collateral, they want to stake in a specific protocol, or they want to swap it into another asset. So they want to use those kind of, they put those assets to make more money for them or for a specific purpose. So wallet, I think that would be maintained as a super app where the protocol is going to stick with one chain. I only realized this thing when recently our research team did some research about the growth of multi-chain products and protocol. And then we realized that, you know, every time that in very few cases, a multi-chain product gonna wins a native protocol that was built on that chain. For example, so we all know that, you know, Sushi or Oneinch already deployed on BSC, but people still prefer PancakeSwap because it was native on BSC. And Sushi also deployed on Polygon as well. But then I think the developers and the whole Poly, I think, you know, QuickSwap also received more support from the foundation as well. And, you know, a lot of builders, when it comes to building stuff on Polygon, they probably want to prioritize their liquidity on QuickSwap rather than SushiSwap. And it's also happened the same with Phantom or with Solana as well. The developers on, I think there's several reasons for this. The first one is multi-chain product is, I think the contribution of a multi-chain protocols to a specific ecosystem is not that much compared to the native protocol was built 100% all in for that chain. When a multi-chain product deploy a protocol or the product on a specific chain, they also, you know, on one side they contribute, they can send their user base to use those kind of chain, but then as the ecosystem on that chain, you know, explode, there will be a lot of people using that chain as well, and then you are a multi-chain product and you use a lot of, and you are one of the key builders on that chain, there could be a lot of people, you capture a lot of users from that chain, and then you support the new chain who have, you know, very little user base. So it's more about you capture the user base from one chain and you send it to a new chain that never have, or you have very little user before. I think in terms of resource allocation and support allocation from the foundation perspective, this is something that really makes the foundation to think about how much effort they should support a multi-chain product or a multi-chain team as well. So I think protocol is still gonna stick with to have better support and from the foundation, and also take the advantage of being native on that on specific chain. It's much better than go multi-chain. And then for the interface or wallet like us, it's gonna be maintained as a super app where we can support all the blockchain platform and all the ecosystem, whatever that you need that kind of, because the wallet or the interface in crypto, beside of centralized chain, wallet or interfaces are the people who own the most user base. So I think in this case, when a wallet service provider who have a very large user base work with a DeFi ecosystem or a specific blockchain platform, it's more about a win for the ecosystem or that specific blockchain more than a win for the wallet. But then the wallet can capture 10% out of specific chain, but it can support like hundreds of blockchain platforms. So that's also a win and for them to diversify. So I think this kind of test is going to be, it's just the way that we thought about what the market is running at this time. This might be changed, over the time, but I think I'm taking a look, I'm really go deep dive into this, watching the way that people use. And also we're following the growth of other DeFi protocols, other DeFi wallets, interface, and also the ecosystem on the specific chain as well. So we can figure out what is the real way that we can think about growth in this space for the foundation, for a protocol and for a service provider like us, where we can really form a win-win-win partnership. Everything in this space, when they collab with each other, there will be a positive sum game that we can, I'm not taking your user base, you're not taking our user base, but then we collab together and we can, attract more user from traditional finance to decentralized finance.
This is super interesting because I literally had this conversation internally about, why Sushi trying to go all multi-chain, but however, it didn't become number one in any of the chain even in Ethereum, it's not number one. I think the only place that they were number one was a, what's
Ethereum.
That? What? No, XDAI.
XDAI, okay.
No, XDAI. Yeah, so yeah. Like all of the other ones, like Polygon, BSC, they're usually beyond definitely not in top three. So my kind of conclusion around this topic was that, in order, maybe the only thing that could make this whole multi-chain strategy work is that they also have a cross-chain bridge that is, in their interface. Because otherwise, whatever money that's on Ethereum on Sushi is not going to go to the Polygon one or the Avalanche one. Because the money in Avalanche, they want to go to Trader Joe's. They want to go to the place that have the best liquidity, exactly to what you said. So I thought this is super, super interesting.
Yeah. So even if you are supporting those kind of blockchain bridge, that would be another solution that comes in. It's like, so for EVM-based chain, it's easy because you can use only one single app like MetaMask to access into, those kind of blockchain platform. But then if you want to, let's say you want to build a protocol on Ethereum, and then you want to build another protocol on Solana, at this stage, when you build the bridge, you know the users need to use two different apps, two different wallets like Phantom and also MetaMask to access into those kind of bridge. So that would be a problem from user experience perspective as well. So that's why I think to bring a better user experience for those, if you want to offer those kind of blockchain bridge, you need to own the wallet tech stack where you already support the users to access into two different chains and access on two different chains at one interface. So this is that's also the reason why we at the beginning Coinnet Wallet focus on building that technology before we start building the bridge. So if you already control that wallet tech stack, it means that when on one single interface with one single wallet app, you only access into the assets on two different chains, and the user experience at that time is similar to the user experience when you trade two assets on the same chain.
Right. Yeah. It is not going to be easy. I think you're right in the sunset. I think whoever owns the customer, like that stack, should be the aggregator. Other than that, I think being a focused approach is always, it's probably going to be a better solution. I was just going to say that, like, even if it's just not multi-chain, even if it's like, a application trying to build lending, swap, and maybe some of the other function in one DeFi project, I think it's still not functioning the best, primarily because the composability nature of DeFi. I think people prefer that, one project focus on one specific thing, and then, you have the brand awareness of that specific solution and then work with other ones rather than one project try to do a lot of things at the same time. So I think this is definitely an interesting discussion. I mean, I personally got impacted quite a bit by the super app thesis that, is quite strong in Asian culture. Like, you've seen a lot of conglomerate in Southeast Asia, in China. So naturally, I would think, that would apply. But I realized, it took me 2 years, but I gradually realized that the super app thesis may not be as valid when it comes to the open-ended type of protocol layer. So I think this is an interesting discussion. We come to the kind of towards the end of this conversation. I do want to ask you one last question. I think that's probably the most pivotal and also hard question in this one. What do you think of the ultimate state of wallets? Do you think it would be a winner-take-all game like the browsers? Or do you think we'll see something different?
I'm not sure what is going to happen in future, but here's what I thought about this. So I think the future of wallets will be something like, the technology will be, upgrading and improving over time. So at some point, I think the users don't need to care about your asset. Your assets is on what chain, but then you only need to you use one single seed phrase, and you basically can store all the assets from similar to the way that you use a centralized exchange or a custodial or centralized custodial wallet. I think in future, anyone who can building a wallet that's serving those kind of user experience gonna be the winner, and yes, I think that would be a winner take it all, but for specific markets, like if you are you're gonna be like a winner take it all when it's come to surfing a wallet for game players, or it comes to you are going to the winner take it all wallet to support a DeFi ecosystem, and also it's also different, you know, when you're serving, you know, users from, you know, different countries, different, you know, demographic as well. But yes, I think, you know, in future, when the technology is quite mature, I expect to see, you know, the wallet gonna be, you know, the wallet with the most user base gonna have the most influence, and also, you know, take the most, you know, market shares, when it comes to, you know, serving people accessing to DeFi's and metaverse. And that's also, you know, the thing that we are trying to achieve at Coinite as well. We're trying to, so currently Coinite has, you know, more than nearly million users, base. And, when we talk about mass adoption, you know, popular, platform nowadays owning billions of users, serving billions of users all around the world. And we want, and, you know, talking about mass adoption, I think a decentralized or any builders in this space, if they want to build a product that really comes to mass adoption, that product itself or that platform itself going to deserve, you know, billions of users from all around the world. And, yeah, one of the things is, we realize, and, you know, when people use a wallet, you know, is that, it's very easy for people to switch between the protocols, but it's very hard for them to switch between, wallets. People are too lazy. You know, they want to store their assets on one single wallet address. And then, you know, and let's say that if you already use MetaMask, to store all your assets there, is you don't want to, you know, export your private key and you import into too many wallet service provider, because, you know, you don't want to take any risk about security. What if you know, if we import the sys phrase into a scam or a fake applications, that would be a really, really bad case for us. So, you know, normally users, they don't want to change the wallet dApps, you know, very, often, and they don't want to import one single sys phrase into a lot of wallets. So I think, you know, in future, that will be, I think, still be a, you know, winner take it all game for a wallet that can really serve the largest user base. The wallet who can serve like billions of users is gonna be, who will be the you know, take the most of the market shares in this market. And we're trying to do whatever we can to put Coinite 98 into that position.
Great. I appreciate you sharing these are super insightful comments. I'm sure this is also some question that people have been thinking about over the past 2-3 years, because I think people on the one hand see the clear business model of wallet, because that's the kind of on-chain or Web3 kind of entrance for everyone. But at the same time, people are also wondering, you know, what's the kind of go-to-market and how do you attract users? And then also, like, if that's going to be a super competitive red ocean. So I appreciate the insight that you shared. And this send in conclusion to our podcast today. I really appreciate you joining today. Thank you for the time.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you for having me today. It was a great honor for me to, you know, having a chance sharing about what we are building at Coinite98. It was a really, you know, good conversations, and thanks for having me again, Mabel, and see you soon in the next episode.